One of the questions or criticisms or comments that was mentioned to me last week after last week's shmooze which is a valid point. Somebody said to me that you can sometimes listen to somebody talking and he says something and it makes a lot of sense, b'sha'as ma'aseh, when you're listening to it, but somehow for some reason it doesn't last. 20 minutes later it disappears and any hiseiros that one got, b'sha'as ma'aseh, has no lasting effect. So basically, what's the point of the exercise? That's a question which shouldn't have been coming from a bocher, actually. That's a question which should have been coming from me. It's a question that I ask myself the whole time. What's the point of the exercise? But the question is a valid question. All of us have these occasions when we are misaira, when somebody says something to us or somebody sheds a light on something and you suddenly see the picture in a certain way and you think, oh, you know, this is going to solve the problem for eternity. I'm now going to act differently and I'm now going to see things differently and I'm now going to understand things differently. And as my grandmother used to say, it lasts from, she used to have this expression, from Esther Thomas bis Purim. It lasts from Thomas Esther until Purim. And as we said, the question is a valid question. Why is it that even when we see the emes in front of our eyes, it doesn't have a lasting effect? It's an hiseiros for a few minutes, a few hours, sometimes even for a few days, and then it dissipates. And perhaps the best example is this period of the year. Comes Leil Slichus, it comes Rosh Hashanah, I say it's Yemei Tshuva, Yom Kippur. Every Jew has a Basher Hu Shom, on whatever level he is, and whatever Madrege he is, he has a certain Hisayrus. Everybody, when they daven Ne'ilah and Yom Kippur, has a Hisayrus. Everybody, when they say Hashem Alekim or Motzi Yom Kippur, has a Hisayrus. Even the Ma'ariv or Motzi Yom Kippur is still the Hisayrus. Even Kiddush Levona, he slopes a slightly different Kiddush Levona. And by the time you get to Shacharis, the morning after Yom Kippur, somehow or other, it all disappeared. Why? What happened? So I think there are three nekudas here. There are three reasons for this. I want to talk about the three different reasons. I think Chazal already honed in on this, or chap this nekuda. The Gemara in Saita and Daf Yud Gimel tells us a very interesting story. The Gemara in Saita tells us the following story. The Gemara says that Yaakov Avinu died, and Yaakov Avinu was taken to be buried in Moras HaMachpelah. And when they took Yaakov Avinu to bury him in Moras HaMachpelah, the Gemara says that Esav came, and Esav said, no, I'm not allowing that Yaakov Avinu should be buried in Moras HaMachpelah. Omalehen, and what was the taina that Esav had that Yaakov Avinu shouldn't be buried in Moras HaMachpelah? He said, Didihu, it's my place, it's my plot, it's my grave. Why? Because I'm the Bukhar. There's only one burial spot here. The shaila is whether I should be buried here or whether Yaakov should be buried here. I am the Bukhar, therefore it's my prerogative, it's my right that I should be buried here in Ma'asa Machpelah. Omrulei, so the children of Yaakov turned round to Esav and they said, you sold it. You sold your Bechira. You sold it to Yaakov. Therefore, you gave up on your rights of burial here. So the Gemara says that Esav started arguing back as to whether the burial spot is a din in the Bechira. It's not a din in the Bechira. He went to London. It was a whole London, and he had a whole Londus. And he had a whole Londus to prove that it was his. So they said no. In the Shtar Mechira, in the arrangement that was made when Yaakov bought the Bechira off you, was written Mefurish in the Shtar that the Kever in Moriz Machpelah belongs to Yaakov, it doesn't belong to you. So what are you drawing a cup? So he said, prove it. So he said, what do you mean prove it? You wrote a Shtar with Yaakov. When you sold the Bechira, you wrote a Shtar. So Esav said, yeah, I wrote a Shtar. So show me the Shtar. You say you got a Shtar? Bring me the Shtar. Have a Liyigrita. Bring me the Shtar. So they said, we got a problem. What's the problem? Amrulei, they said to him, Igrita bar the Mitzrayimi. The Shtar's not here. The Shtar's in Mitzrayim. We forgot. We left the Shtar in Mitzrayim. So Esav said, no problem. Go get someone to bring the Shtar. So the Shaila was, who should go and bring the Shtar? There was a debate, there was a discussion. Who should bring the Shtar? They said, Naphtali should go and bring the Shtar. It says about Naphtali that he's speedy, he's fast. Naphtali will go like a deer. He'll go, he'll bring the Shtar, he'll bring back the Shtar. The Vaida, what was going on? As all this discussion was going on, where was Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov Avinu was lying there, wrapped up in his tachrichim, lying on the floor. Because they brought him to Moriz Machpelah to bury him, and they were Chevra Kadisha was going to pick him up and put him in the grave. And Esav said, stop, it's mine. So the Gemara says that Chushim Berei Dedon Tomen Hava. The Chushim Ben Don was standing there. Chushim, the son of Don, was standing there when all this was going on. He was also a Levi, his grandfather. He was also standing there. The Gemara says that Chushim Ben Don Yikiron Le Odnei. He was deaf. Chushim Ben Don was deaf. Couldn't hear. So he didn't hear anything that was going on. Amalahu, but he turned around and he said, my high. He said, what's going on here? I came here for a Leviah. I can't understand what's happening. All I can see is that Yaakov Avinu is lying on the floor. Nothing's happening. Nothing's moving. Amrulei. So they started explaining to him. So one guy got up, and he gets out of Chushim Ben Don, and he starts screaming in Chushim Ben Don's ear, and he says to him, Kama Akiv Hai Ad Da'asi Naphtali Me'ar the Mitzrayim. We're waiting. It's going to take a few days. Naphtali has to go back to Mitzrayim. He has to bring the Shtar, which proves that the Mokum Kavura in the Moriz Machpelah belongs to Yaakov and doesn't belong to Esav. Amalahu. Chushim Ben Don said, what are you talking about? Va'ad de'osin Naphtali me'ad Mitzrayim he'avi abba mutl be'bizoyen. You mean you're going to leave Yaakov Avinu? Yaakov Avinu, you're going to leave him lying on the floor here for a few days until somebody decides to bring the Shtar from Mitzrayim? Shokal, kulpo, machi areishe. Knocked off his head, and he said, Esav's head, and said, okay, let's go. Let's make the Leviah. That's the story in the Gemara. And Asher B'chaim Shulevitz made the Kakasha. He said, I don't understand what's going on here. He said, how come none of the children of Yaakov had the same reaction that Chushim Ben Don had? What did Chushim Ben Don say? I don't care. There is a Shtar, there isn't a Shtar, there was a Shtar, there will be a Shtar, there would have been a Shtar. It's irrelevant. Yaakov Avinu is mutter b'bizayin. What, are you going to leave Yaakov Avinu lying on the floor like this for days? V'yadiyosi naftoli mi'arad mitzrayim ye'avi abba mutter b'bizayin. How come the Shiftei Kol were able to live with such a situation? So Rav Chaim says, he says, think about psychologically what was going on here. He says, they came and they brought Yaakov Avinu in order to bury him in the Moras of Machpelah. They said, stop, you can't bury him. What was the next stage? The discussion started. He said that he should be buried there. They said, no, halachically, Yaakov has a right to be buried there. They came back with a taina that Yaakov had bought the Bechira from Esav. He came back with a taina that Esav had sold the Bechira, but he hadn't sold the right of Kfura. They came back with a taina. Now he had sold the right of Kfura, they had a shtar. He came back with a taina. If you have a shtar, bring me the shtar. Then they would have brought him the shtar. What would he have tined it afterwards? Mazuyeth. And then they would have got into the whole thing. Be Mekayim the shtar. Not to be Mekayim the shtar. Yeah, Mekayim the shtar. Yeah, Taninon. Ish Taninon. So, what was going on here? Every time Esav came up with an argument, and the Bnei Yaakov came up with a counter argument, they thought, "Oh, this is it. This is going to destroy him now. We've won." Then he came back with a second argument, so they had to come up with another argument. When they came up with the next argument, they said, "Oh, this is it. We'll slug him up now." But it didn't happen, and it kept on going on. And as it went on, says Reb Chaim, what happened psychologically to the Bnei Yaakov? The Bnei Yaakov got used to the idea that Yaakov Avinu is lying on the floor dead. Because he says that's the psychology of a person. The psychology of a person is that you get used to a situation very, very fast. It got to a point, he says, by the time they went to the third taina or the fourth taina or the fifth taina, they didn't anymore see the bizoyim because they were so tied up with the arguments backwards and forwards, and we're going to win any minute now, that they didn't even realize anymore. They didn't see anymore the bizoyim of Yaakov Avinu lying on the floor. Chushim ben Don had one advantage over them. He was deaf. Because he was deaf, he wasn't part of the conversation that was going on, because he couldn't hear the conversation that was going on. So what happened? All he saw the whole time in front of him, he heard nothing. He wasn't involved in the tainas. He didn't go through the psychological process of, oh, in a minute I'm going to win, and in a minute we're going to bury him. Oh, in another minute we're going to win, and another we're going to bury him. All he saw was Yaakov Avinu lying on the floor. He saw Yaakov Avinu lying on the floor. All he saw was one thing, bizoyim, 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 bizoyim. Says Reb Chaim, what are Chazal telling us here? Chazal are telling us a Meridiki Yisod. And the Yisod is that what kills a person that he can't change? What is the prime catalyst that causes that a person cannot change? One thing and one thing only. Haragel. You get used to a certain situation, it's practically impossible to break out of the situation. What happens when a person is misayra? When a person is misayra, he rises above the situation for a moment. He has the ability to pull himself out of the situation to become a Chushim Ben Don. He has an ability to be able to rise up out of that which he's involved in on a constant level and see things from a different perspective for a minute. But then the Haragel comes into play again. The system, what he's used to, the Seder that he's been in the whole time. And he immediately falls back into that, and that moment of his Hisayrus disappears. That is the first reason why it's difficult for us to make a change. Haragel. We're in a system. We've been acting in a certain way for a long period of time. We've been acting in a certain way, and we've been justifying to ourselves the way that we've been acting. And we are brilliant. However stupid we are, when it comes to Negias, we are all of us Elohim. We are the biggest Lamdonim in the world, and we are the biggest Elohim in the world to justify to ourselves what we're doing. And because we're constantly in a situation that we're justifying to ourselves what we're doing, it is impossible for us to break out of that situation. That's problem number one. There's a second problem. What's the second problem? There's a famous Gemara. The Gemara, which everybody knows, the Gemara in the Dorim, the Gemara of Rabbi Akiva, who went away from home for 12 years, was learning in the yeshiva of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. He comes home after 12 years. Comes home to visit his wife. He's been away for 12 years. He's been away from his wife. He had children already. He had a family already. He's been away for 12 years. He comes home. And the Gemara says that when he comes home, he overhears a conversation going on between a woman and his wife. And basically, the woman saying to his wife, "What sort of husband do you have? Guy goes away, leaves you for 12 years on your own to bring up the kids. Takes no interest in you, takes no interest in the children, doesn't worry about where you're going to get panosa from, where you're not going to get panosa from. What sort of husband is this? Nishka Mensch. Yeah, Limitaya, it's very important. 12 years to go away. Right? Ever watch the Inga Light here? Come 6:30, 7 o'clock. They're terrified of the possible phone call that they may get from their wives. Where are you? So Bakita's wife answers to the guy and says to the woman, "I don't care. As far as I'm concerned, you can go and learn for another 12 years. Bakita hears this, turns around, and he goes back for another 12 years. He left home. Think for a moment. He left home, he had a kid of 3 years old. He comes back after 24 years, the kid's 27, he's got five children already, he's got children he doesn't know, he's got tens of grandchildren he doesn't know, God, he doesn't know his wife, doesn't know anybody. He says, "Rav Shalom, I've got one question," he says. "You already came home. You're already there. Is vos how dear eins again zogen shalom vos machste?" He says, "So what do you care? Why can't you go into the house and say to your wife, 'How are you doing?' You're there already." So she said to the neighbor, "I don't care if he learns another 12 years. But you're already there. You came home. So go in and say, 'Hi, how are you doing? How are the kids doing? Look at your children.'" Says Reb Chaim, "He had a reason why he didn't go home." Says Reb Chaim, "It takes 3 minutes to boil a kettle of water." So the guy says, "You know what? It takes 3 minutes to boil a kettle of water. So I'll put the kettle on the gas for a minute. And when it's reached a minute, I'll turn the gas off. I'll wait 20 minutes. Then I'll put it on for another minute. Then I'll turn it off for 10 minutes. And then I'll put it on for another minute. And then I'll have boiled water, because it takes 3 minutes to boil water." Says Reb Chaim, "It takes 3 minutes to boil water if it's continuity, if it's Pratzifus. But if you try to boil a kettle by putting the gas on and turning the gas off, and putting the gas on and turning off, you'll never boil the water." There is the same thing. That Rabbi Akiva understood. 12 plus 12 doesn't make 24 in Torah, as Rav Moshe Gifter put it. In mathematics, 12 plus 12 makes 24. So the Tells of Rosh Shiva, in mathematics, 12 plus 12 is 24. In Torah, 12 plus 12 is not 24. There's 12 and there's 12, it's not 24. Why don't things have an effect on us? Why is the Mashgiach say Vaden one after the other, night after night, and five of sitting there saying Mitzvot Yisharim night after night, night after night, and nothing's happening? Zilch! It's not having an effect, why not? Because it can't have an effect if there's no continuity. You can't strike from Sunday to Thursday and have a bang of money every week from Thursday to Sunday and then start again on Sunday and expect that something should happen. If there's no continuity, nothing happens. Yes, if we would be working from Sunday through the entire week without any hefsek, if the Friday would be like a Sunday and the Shabbos would be like a Monday in terms of the davening and the limud Torah and everything else, and there would be continuity, then maybe it would have an effect. But you can't stop and declare Bein HaZmanim Thursday lunchtime every week until Sunday morning and then turn around and say, "Why is nothing happening?" If there's no Ritzifus, Nothing happens. That's problem number two. What's problem number three? Problem number three is what I say over the whole time. You heard it from me many, many times. But as the Mesillas Yesharim says in his Hakdama, Mirev Hapirsum Advarim Nishkochim, that which gets said over many times is the first thing that gets forgotten. The problem is Yerov. Chazal would say that in the history of mankind, there were 10 famines. And each famine was worse than the last one. And the worst famine is the famine which is going to come by Achris Hayomim, which the Pasuk says, Lo Yirov Lalechem, it's not going to be a famine for bread. Lo Yitzom Elamayim, it's not going to be a drought, but there's not going to be anything to drink. Kiyum Lishmoy Dvar Hashem, there's going to be a thirst and a famine for Dvar Hashem. I was able to hear the Motzi Shabbos in the Rebbe Gurutz's house in Gateshead. The Talmid Jirov asked, and he said, about half a year before he was Nifter, he said, afterwards I heard it was a famous vortex, he used to say it over the whole time. He said, what's Chazal telling us here? 10 famines in the history of mankind, and the worst famine is Lo Yirov Lalechem V'Leitzom Elamayim. It's not the worst, it's the best. It's a machaya. Halavai. There'll be a thirst in the world that they want to hear Torah. What could be better than that? So why are Chazal coming along and saying it's the worst of all the famines? So the Panei Rav said a merely kavult. The Panei Rav was a room packed with bochrim. Motzi Shabbos, he was engaged for Shabbos. Motzi Shabbos, he was eating lav malka by Avlei Gurutz, and the Leilim came in. And he said, Kinderlach. He said, my children. He said, you know what the problem is? Baruch Hashem. He said, you guys have never experienced a famine. You don't know what a famine is. He said, but we, my generation, he said, knew what famine is. He said, you know what happens by a famine? When there's no food, there's nothing to eat. He said, people crawl around garbage cans. And they find a potato peel. And they take the potato peel out of the garbage can. And they eat it. And as far as they're concerned, it's Kesudas Shleime B'Shaitei. It's the most marvelous meal they ever had. That's what a famine does. The hunger drives a person to a situation where a potato peel is a Kesudas Shleime B'Shaitei. He said, that's what Chazal were talking about. Chazal was saying that the worst famine is yet to come. And that's going to be a famine by Achris Hayomim. And in that Achris Hayomim, you know what the famine's going to be? Loyla lechem v'loyla mayim. It's not going to be in reference to bread, and it's not going to be in reference to water. Kim lishmoyaz dvar Hashem. It's going to be a famine in reference to Torah. And you know what that famine is going to do? People are going to eat potato peels and think that they had a Siddur Shleimah b'Shaitei. People will learn a minimum of Torah. It'll be a potato peel of Torah. And they'll think, oh, this is a Siddur Shleimah b'Shaitei. Say Chazal, that's the worst situation the Jew can get into. But he sets his sights to a minimum. And he's satisfied with that. That's the worst rov that can be. The minute the Jew can turn around, and when you prove to him that he's working at a 30% or a 20% or a 40% in terms of limud Torah, of what your normal average yeshiva bachur is learning, and he can turn around and he can say to you, Rebbe, but you know who we are, you know where we're coming from, all the rest of the garbage, then you know that divrei chazal are mekuyim. Le'rov lelechem. When a person becomes satisfied with a minimum, he gets nowhere. Rabbi Guritz turned around and Rabbi Guritz said to him, now I know Pshat in a Pasuk. So he looked at him and he said, what Pasuk? And Rabbi Guritz said, it's a Pasuk, we say it in Kabbalah Shabbos every week. Ushmuel b'kayre shmoy.
Says Rav Gurewitz, what is the pshat Ushmuel b'keirei Shmoy? What does it mean? So he says there's a medrash. And the medrash says that a baskel came out from heaven and said that the Gadol Ador is going to be born and his name is going to be Shmuel. Says the medrash, every single Jewish mother named a child that was born in that period of time Shmuel. Says the medrash, all of them became Gedolei Yisrael. Says the medrash, Ushmuel. And Shmuel was so great, B'keirei Shmoy. Amongst all those B'keirei Shmoy who were called Shmuel, Shmuel was the greatest of all of them. Says Reb Leib, how come they all became Gedolei Yisrael? Because they called out of the Bris, B'keirei Shmoy B'Yisrael, Shmuel. So he became a God of Yisrael. Says Reb Leib, you know why they became Gedolei Yisrael? Because their mothers gave them the name Shmuel. Because they wanted them to be Gedolei Yisrael. So the chinuch that they got was become a Gadol b'Yisrael. When you set the sights, when you set the objective on Gadlus, you become Gadol. You become great. If you set the sights at the minimum, you remain at the minimum. It all depends on where a person sets his sights. There are three reasons why we don't change. We don't change because psychologically we're in a matzav of a helga, we're used to doing what we're doing and it's impossible for a person to break out of it. We don't change because there's no continuity. We're jump starting the whole time. 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, bang! Everything collapses. And when it collapses, you have to start again from scratch. You have to boil the kettle from the water stove. And continuously we're starting again, and we're getting nowhere. We're treading water. And we're satisfied with the minimum. We have no sights, we have no objectives. Gadlus man daka shmeim, who mentions it, Bichal? Be happy that I'm doing the minimum. That's the way we're all walking around. I mean, look, he just has to say one word and he gets the same response in this language, in that language, with this blue, with that blue, with this emphasis, with that emphasis. But at the end of the day, the answer's the same. What do you want from me? I'm doing great. I wasn't learning and now I'm learning 25 minutes a day. Let's dance. If you set the sights and the objectives of the minimum, we get nowhere. So what are we meant to do? What are we expected to do? I was thinking today. Every country has different systems of how it teaches people to drive. When I was a kid, I don't know if it still exists today, I've no idea, but when I was a kid, the way that they taught people in England to drive was, you got into a car, and this car had a teacher in it. But the car was a very interesting car because it had two sets of everything. The driver had a steering wheel, and the guy sitting next to him had a steering wheel. The driver had a gear, and the guy sitting next to him had a gear. The driver had a clutch, and you had a clutch. Everything was double. And what happened was, you got in the car, and he said to you, drive. Good drive. I had a drive. No problem. Just follow me. And he would start driving, and you would drive with him. Now, every time he turned the wheel, your wheel turned as well. Every time he changed gear, your gear moved as well. Every time he pressed the clutch, your clutch went down as well. And he got you used to the idea of turning the wheel, using the touch, using the gear. This was the way that it worked. When you sat in these cars, not next to the driver, but when you sat in the back seat, it was a very interesting phenomenon that went on. There was the guy driving, and next to him there was a steering wheel that was turning, and there was a clutch that was going up and down, and there was a gear that was moving. And there was only sitting there. Why did I think about that this afternoon? I'll tell you why I thought about it this afternoon. Because I thought it's American Marshall. We live in a world which is totally a virtual world. It's not real. And we're sitting by the second steering wheel. We're sitting there and we're driving. We're turning the wheel, we're turning the gears, we're pressing the clutch, and it's a lechtige tog. It's not us. There's a driver sitting in the driving seat who's actually doing it. We're just imagining that we're driving. Who's the driver of the Ribbono Shel Olam? We're maminim. There's a shkacha in the world, there's Siyata Dishmaya in the world, there's a Ribbono Shel Olam in the world. He's driving. He did a Moedik HaChesed with us. He said, you know what, I'll make you feel good. You can sit next to me and play games. I'll give you a wheel, I'll give you a gear, I'll give you a clutch. But by the end of the day, you're not doing anything. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam that's doing it. Why don't we get anywhere? Because it's impossible. It's impossible because of the reasons that we said. But it's only impossible if you're working on the system that it's me. That I'm the one who has to do it. But if you're working on the system that it's not me, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam, then there's no problem. Who cares what the psychological problems are? Who cares that there's no retifus? Who cares that I set my sights to the minimum? If the person wants to drive the car, the car will drive. Whether I do anything or I don't do anything. So basically, what's the answer? Basically, the answer is one thing. If you say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I know who I am, and I know where I'm at, and I know my problems, and I can't do anything about it, so help me. Drive the car for me. Do it for me. It's one other thing. And this I've also said many times before. I once read in a book, I can't remember who the guy was, but he was what's called a philosopher of art. There's a whole area which is called the philosophy of art. Don't ask me why I was reading the book, don't ask me how I got into it, I don't remember. But for some strange reason I got into this at one point in time in my life, and I read a book from this guy. This guy was a goy. He was a philosopher, a goy. And he was mechaven to a maimer chazal without knowing it. And he said as follows. He said that there is a tremendous debate between different schools of thought and the philosophy of art. What is the definition of drawing a painting? Of painting a painting? When is the maisa of painting? I drew a picture. So if you want to ask yourself afterwards, when was the chalais maisa of painting on this picture? When did it take place? So he said one school of thought, Tainas, that it takes place when the artist takes the brush with the paint on it and puts it onto the canvas. That's the act of painting. And he said there's another school of thought which says no. The act of painting is after the artist has painted the painting. When he takes a step back to have a look, is it okay or do I have to change it? That act of taking a step back and reflecting about the painting and deciding whether he wants the painting to stay the way it is or he wants to change it, that is the act of painting. This guy didn't realize that it's a Mefurish Chazal. The Ribbono Shel Olam is described as a tzur, as a rock. Along come Chazal and say, Al tikrei tzur elo tzayor, a painter. Ein tzur ke'elei kenu, ein tzayor ke'elei kenu. There is no painter like the Ribbono Shel Olam. Where did the Ribbono Shel Olam paint? Well, where is the painting of the Ribbono Shel Olam hanging? It's hanging outside. It's the Bria. Ribbono Shel Olam was the greatest artist that ever existed. He created a universe. How did he create his universe? How long did it take him to create his painting? Ask any kid. How many days of Bria were there? What will the kid answer you? 7. There were 7 days of Bria. 7? There were 6?
But on the other hand, we find Chazal the whole time say seven. Shiva Yimei Bria. Kama v'kama pa'omim v'nishah. So you find that expression. There was Sheshis Yimei Maisa, but there was Sheva Yimei Bria. What's the pshat? The Rebbe Shlom painted a painting. 6 days. What did he do on the seventh day? Took a step back. Then he had a look. And decided, is it any good or not? Vayaki Tov. And he said, it's fine. What's the concept of Shabbos by a Jew? What's the concept of Menuchas Shabbos by a Jew? What's the concept of Issa Malacha on Shabbos by a Jew? The concept of Shabbos by a Jew and the concept of Issa Malacha by a Jew is two things. Number one, reflection. Every week the Jew has an opportunity to stand back and to have a look and to say, how were my 6 days? What was the picture that I painted? And what needs to be rectified and what needs to be improved? And then he goes weiter. And Shabbos is also a day on which the Jew turns around and the Jew says, I'm not driving the car. The Jew refrains from doing any malachas whatsoever, and things continue. The world continues. Why? Because he's not driving the car. The Ribbono Shel Olam is driving the car. Those are the two messages of Shabbos. Chazal come along, and Chazal tell us the following. Good morning, Shabbos. Daf Kuf Yud Ches. Kol Aveira She'odem Oisa. Any Aveira that a person did. Even if Chas V'Sholem he was Eivid Aveida Zara, Im Shemer Shabbos, Moichlin Loi. Shabbos is an automatic Mechila for Aveinis. Why is Shabbos an automatic Mechila for Aveinis? The Mefarshim say, because what is Shabbos? Shabbos is when a person basically does two things. Firstly, he makes a statement. And the statement that he makes is that the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. That's what Shabbos is all about. Zeichel L'Briya. And I'm not driving the car, the Ribbono Shel Olam is driving the car. And Shabbos is the time when a person takes a step back and thinks about how his life is going, in which direction he's going, and how he should change and improve. And when a person does those two things, it comes from itself. I said last week from Rebellia, the story with the guy who came to Rebellia in the dream. Somebody asked me afterwards, and Rebellion asked me afterwards, what's the makor for the story, number one, and what's the makor that in the Olam HaEmes Shabbos goes according to when you were makabel Shabbos here and when you finish Shabbos here. The makor for the story I'll tell him privately. The makor for the Yisoid that Rebellion says is mefurush in the Yisoid V'Sherish HaAveda. The Yisoid V'Sherish HaAveda in Shar Shmini in the end of Perek Aleph says, Kosav b'Sefer HaTagin. Sefer HaTagin says, Im nishmosei shel adam b'gehinim. If the neshama of a person is in Gehinim, b'chol yom shishi, every Friday, meitzien eisem b'gehinim, they take him out of Gehinim, b'eis shehayaragil b'aylam azel lishpois. At whatever time he was makabel on himself, isim alocha, on Erev Shabbos. V'chein, the Tosefes Mikodesh Al-Achel, and similarly, when it comes to Moitzi Shabbos, Ma'achin Oisei Shalei Lahachnisei L'Gehinim, until the time when he was Kevea in this world, his Moitzi Shabbos. V'Yalkein Sarich Lihizoyel B'Zeh Ma'oid, U'mutal Al-Ha'odom, and a person is obligated, Lahazir B'nei Beitai, to tell his family to be Makpid on Tosefes Shabbos, because in Gehinim, they'll take you out and they'll put you back according to the Zman in which you were Kaveh, and this world is Mufurisha, Yisayid Vesherish ha'avoda. Funny Jerov, the Chanu Bracha, used to say the following. He had an empire in Eastern Europe before the war. Yeshiva, a girl seminary, a hospital, a mechina, he had everything. A wife, a son-in-law who was Migdala Yisrael, other children, other than one son, everything got wiped out in the war. His wife was killed in the war, his children were killed in the war, other than one son who was in Chutzlaretz already. Yeshiva was destroyed, everything was destroyed. And he came by himself to Eretz Yisrael. He himself got saved because he was sent by the Jewish community to try and arrange to get visas, and he got stuck when the war broke out. He ended up in Eretz Yisrael. He started straight away to rebuild the yeshiva. He had a vision, he had a dream, he saw a hill in Bnei Brak. He said, here, I'm going to build my yeshiva. And he went off to Chutz Eretz to try and raise money. And the Panjurov used to say the following. He used to say, you know, I have to go raise money. Anybody who has to raise money knows of this feeling. He said, I used to come, I had an appointment with somebody, I used to come to the building, the guy lived on the third floor. I used to go up the stairs, and on every stair I would stop and I would say, Ribbono Shalom, please, Halavai is not at home. Because the second step, I'd say, Ribbono Shalom, answer my prayer, please, he shouldn't be at home. Why? He says, it's simple, I have to do my job, I have to raise money. But to go and ask somebody for money is terribly, terribly embarrassing. I didn't like doing it. So I used to say, you know, maybe we can be Yetzer, I'll go up and he won't be at home. So we get the best of both worlds. So there's the Pono Jirov, and then afterwards I thought to myself, why is it that if somebody owes me money, if that guy up there would owe me money, I'd go charging up the stairs and banging the door, where are you, where are you, open the door. And the minute that I'm coming for Stocker, I don't want him to be at home. I'm embarrassed to ask him, Why? Because the Pono Jirov, what's the difference? The difference is very simple. If he owes me money, it's my money. If it's my money, I'm not embarrassed. When I'm coming for stock, it's his money. To go and ask a guy to give me his money, that's embarrassing. Says the Pono Jirov, so what's the Yisod? The Yisod is, if you truly believe it's Yenna's, it's the other guys, you're embarrassed to ask him for it. Why should he give you something which is his? If you believe it's yours, you've got no embarrassment. Says the Pono Jirov, that's what we say, one of the first things that all of us say on the first night of Slichas. We come to the Ribbono Shalom and we say to the Ribbono Shalom, we messed up. We messed up big time. We know we messed up big time. We also know why. We know why. We know that it's because of the Herigel. We know it's because of the lack of continuity. We know that it's because we set our sights too low. We know. But that's the human being. That's what we are. So what do you want from us? Elamai, we understand one thing. We understand at the end of the day, we don't control the situation, you control the situation, and you're driving the car. We're just making the motions. And therefore, it's you. So do it for us. That's what the Jew says in Slichas. L'cha Hashem Hatzdaka. You're better than giving us Tzedakah. You're doing it for us. It's yours. V'lanu. And we feel boishes upon him. We're embarrassed. Why are we embarrassed? Because it's nothing to do with us. It's really yours. And it's difficult to take something away from somebody which is his. So the Pono Jirov, if a person goes into Slichas without Hargosha, then the Ribbono Shel Olam gives him a Siyata Lishmaya. I heard from a good friend of mine, Rabbi Lokin, is one of the Choshevster Baba Chassidim in New York. He told me a story. He said that the Baba Vareva of Shlemala, when he was running away from the Germans during the war, was hid for a number of weeks in a bunker. He was in a bunker together with a group of other Jews. And there's a story that happened in the bunker, and he told over the story. When did he tell over the story? The minute was in Sons that Divrei Chaim never used to eat Malav Malka. He never ate Malav Malka on Motzei Shabbos. And there's already a whole reason the Kleisenberger Rebbe, the Chaim Rebbe, has a whole shiva where he explains why the Divrei Chaim didn't eat
Malav Malka. But the Minigan's sons was not to eat Malav Malka. The Bava Rebbe was an enikel of Reb Chaim's sons, and he was makpid on Malav Malka. So once, one of the chassidim, Malav Malka, that was sitting, plucked up courage, and he said, Rebbe, how come that you are noyed to eat Malav Malka when the Minigan's sons is not to eat Malav Malka? Your father never ate Malav Malka, your grandfather never ate Malav Malka. How come that you are makpid? So he said, I'll tell you a story. He said, we were hiding from the Germans, we were in a bunker, it was myself, and there were about 20 other Jews there. Men, women, children, we were all in this bunker. And we heard the Germans walking on top of us. They were searching, they were looking, and they were sticking iron rods down into the ground, they were looking for hollow places where Jews were hiding. He says, you can imagine what the feeling was. Everybody knew if they were caught, then that was it. And one of the women there said, let's make a Kabbalah on ourselves. Let's be Makabbalah on ourselves something. Makabbalah on ourselves something, maybe the Rebbe Shalom will help us. So he said immediately the discussion started. So one person said, you know what, let's be Makabbalah on ourselves. We'll fast every Monday and Thursday for the rest of our lives if we survive. Another guy said, let's be Makabbalah on ourselves that if we survive, we'll finish the whole Sefer Tehillim every day. Everyone came up with another suggestion. Then they turned around to him and they said to him, Rebbe, what do you say? He said, Rebbe, I want to tell you something. He said, you can hear the footsteps. Every one of us here thinks that in another 5 minutes we're going to be dead. So there's a tremendous hysteria here, and we'll be makabel on ourselves. He says, but the nature of a person is that mitzvah Hashem, if the Rebbe Shalom does an S for us and we'll survive, within a very short period of time, we will all of us have forgotten bichlal about what the matzav was, and the kabbalah will go away. Why? Because when you accept upon yourself a kabbalah which is too big, it can't last. It has to be something which is small thing, but you know you will be able to keep to it and stick to it. He said, stop talking about Mondays and Thursdays, fasting, finishing Tehillim every day. He said, I've got a better idea. Let's all make a Kabbalah. We'll be makpid to wash for Kazayis, bread, Malav Malka. So everybody accepted upon themselves that Kabbalah, and the Germans went away, and the people in that bunker, all 20 of them survived. He said, from that day onwards, I made that Kabbalah and bread, Malav Malka. We're going to turn around in a few minutes and we're going to say to the Rebbe Shalom Lechaya Hashem HaTzedakah V'lo Nevoishes Haponim. We're going to ask you a favor. We know we can't do it ourselves and we know we need you. But the nature is that when you want something from somebody, if you make a gesture towards him, he'll make a gesture towards you. But if you can start saying, you know what, I'm going to learn 1,000 black gemara, and I'm going to learn day and night next month, and I'm going to learn 3 stories, and I'm going to learn this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, it's not going to happen. But there are small things. If the whole inyan of Shabbos is that we're saying to the Ribbono Shel'Olam, you're driving the car, then one small Kabbalah. If there's a Zmanis and Malacha of Shabbos 40 minutes before the Shkia, we'll all stick to the 40 minutes. One small little thing. It's not the end of the world. One small little thing. Then we'll be able to say to the Rebbe Shalom, Lechaya Hashem HaTzedakah V'lo Nevoishes Haponim, and the Rebbe Shalom will listen to our Bishamei Tfilis, and we'll be Zeicha, the Tichle Shonim, Kilo Leisehel, V'Tochle Shonim, Bichisah.